This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanasan. It is 6 a.m. Friday, the 4th of December, and the weekend is just around the corner. Roshan, what are your plans looking like this weekend?
What are my plans looking like? I don't know, actually. I think I'm going to be making tea at some point. And I know that sounds really boring, but I really do enjoy making Punjabi tea and then just sitting around sipping it.
Because it's a bit more of an involved process than like chucking a tea bag into a mug,
right? I mean, it's the only thing I can do in the kitchen, really. Really speaking, it's the only thing I can do, which I actually care about. It's making Punjabi tea and making a variety of omelets with spices and things like that.
I like the caveat there. It's the only thing you can do which you actually care about.
Yes. Most of the time, food is quite functional for me. There are a few things I do like coffee. I used to love brewing different kinds of coffee. But you know what, Lynn? It's not the cooking show this morning. It's the morning run. What serious business are we up to this morning?
Well, later on, of course, after the 6:45, we'll be looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals to see kind of what's the big news overnight. And we're also looking at what's the big news overnight at about 6:30. But then we're looking at what's happening around the world.
Yes, around the world. We'll take a look at Hong Kong and what's going on with that, because we talked about how the activist, he was arrested.
Joshua Wong,
thank you. He was sentenced to 13 months yesterday. And it looks like Jimmy Lai, the billionaire tycoon, the media tycoon, has been detained for fraud in Hong Kong. Let's take a look at what's happening there. And also, we talk about coronavirus cases in the US. But closer, before then, at about 6:15, 6:20-ish, we'll talk about five effective ways to use your Instagram in the job search or the job hunt. Or, you know, maybe not just Instagram, but social media in general. And if you have any tips and tricks, let us know over on WhatsApp or BFM Radio. Lynn, what's the number?
The number is 01878988899 for WhatsApp. And over on Twitter, it's at BFM Radio. So do let us know what you think throughout the morning. We are about to head into some messages. And then after that, we're going to be asking you, how do you gauge someone's emotional intelligence? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Steve Miller Band with Jet Airliner, something that nobody really wants to be on right now, but we can still appreciate the song nevertheless. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we are looking at this article in Fast Company today, and it's talking about, it's a practical guide to hiring employees with high EQ in this age of COVID-19. And when we talk about EQ, we're talking about emotional intelligence, right? So EQ stands for the emotional quotient, because it's not just important for someone to have the brains and the smarts anymore. It's also important, especially when people are working from home, to be able to communicate well with other people. It raises the question of really, how do you identify someone with a high EQ? You know, what are some of the things that you look out for? Roshan, what do you think about this? You know, what's a sign to you that someone has more EQ than another person, maybe?
This is quite an intriguing question, Lynn, because you asked this about 20 minutes ago when you said, listen, we're going to talk about this. And see, it really comes down to a feel, I think. All right. Do you gravitate towards this individual? Does this individual make you feel comfortable and safe? Because someone with EQ can tap into the emotions around other people, but they are able to read the room better, right, than most other people. And that's not to say they're better than anyone else or that they're worse than anyone else, because it maybe makes them a bit more empathetic. But it is the fact that there are different people in a room. And sometimes it's good to have a person with a high EQ on your team, right? Someone who can read the room and kind of gauge how people are doing. Now, that was easier when you had everyone in the same room. What happens when those rooms are converted into Zoom rooms, right? Or just work from a distance? We are split in BFM. We split into two teams, so one at home, one at work, and then we rotate that role. But a lot of other people, a lot of my friends, a lot of my family, they're working from home individually. They're stuck at home, right? Whether they're accountants or working in the telecommunications business, or whether they're working at startups, they're at home. Now, if they've got families, there's still a bit of that connection at home, but a lot of them do live alone. So there comes the need for someone in the team or the leader to step up and hopefully have that EQ to be like, okay, we need to catch up with these individuals, bring the team together virtually. Even it's not the most ideal situation, but it is better than nothing.
Absolutely.
But that requires a sense of EQ.
Yeah, and I think, and this is the thing, that EQ can be built, right? It's not something that, oh, you know, it's I just don't have it, therefore that's the status quo. I don't have to try. I find that I think a lot of us maybe have been, even if we do have high levels of EQ, we've probably been taxed a little bit by the work from home situation, and the fact that a lot of communication has by necessity shifted to text based communication, right? So In the past, maybe it was easier to read nonverbal cues when you were all sitting in a conference room and discussing a project. How do you read the nonverbal cues when they are really, really nonverbal and you're looking at a screen? I remember once, and I don't pretend to have particularly high EQ. Okay, this was just a person that I knew quite well. We were in a group chat and we were discussing something, and something just felt not right about how this person was responding to the rest of the group. You know, they seemed perfectly professional and completely calm. But then when I messaged them, you know, outside personally, I was like, actually, are you okay? You know, this is, I felt like something was a bit off. And then they were like, actually, no, I'm really not okay. I'm really stressed. So then, you know, we had a conversation about why are you stressed? And it kind of calmed us both down a little bit. So it's a little bit more difficult to try and adapt to these situations. But this, it is also important even to have, like you said, you were talking about having a boss with a high EQ, right?
It doesn't need to be the boss, right? Because, I mean, let's be honest, the boss has a lot on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
But a colleague or team member or anyone in the team who can be, let's call them the emotional quotient in chief, right? The EQ in chief. It just takes one person to bring the room together, right? And that's all that it really takes. Even in a group of friends, sometimes it's just one person who is that emotional center or that EQ sensitive person who can kind of bridge the gap, right? Basically, the diplomat in all situations. And it's
the mediator.
The mediator, the diplomat, the person who can see both sides of the, basically someone that we need in parliament today, like, you know, but hopefully someone Joe Biden can be when it comes to the Senate. But anyway, I'm going ahead of myself here. Lynn, something you said that really made me think is the Zoom digital age that we're in now, whether it's text or video, whatever like that, if we've got a new version of EQ, right? It's digital EQ, text-based. What are the rules for texting, right? Because mm-hmm. texting mm-hmm. can come off very, very plain and dry, and sometimes a bit utilitarian to a degree, which can come off very cold. So this is a big challenge, and I find myself struggling with this a lot of time, because how do you text with someone without sounding like it's just, like you're just doing business, right? Because at the end of the day, you do want to have a relationship beyond just, hey, okay, do this, do that, do this. So I think that's a big struggle for texting, because unless someone knows your tone, it can come off very robotic. And that's a big struggle. So I think that's why having those Zoom, like one of the examples here is just bringing people into virtual chats and just talking, even if at a distance, just seeing someone else's face and having those facial cues with the words makes a big difference.
I found that made a huge difference, particularly during you know, the depths of the MCO when most of us were in isolation, right? And the thing about isolation for a lot of people is that it can magnify senses, you know, emotions like anxiety. It can magnify stress. So a text that you might have found innocuous, you know, completely during the normal, you know, periods of time when you're meeting these people every day, when you haven't seen this person physically in a month, that text can suddenly take on a life of its own. And I actually did find myself trying to manage that stress level. Like, is this person saying what I think they're saying? Or is it just, you know, should I just be taking this at face value? What's happening? Then when you actually video chat with them and see their face, everything just melts away.
Yep, it's a whole different situation. And this reminds me a lot, although slightly different, Lynn, it reminds me of the conversation you had yesterday with Eldar Shafir of Princeton University, right? He's a behavioral scientist. And you guys talked about essentially scarcity and the poverty trap and how a lot of times we talk about how you should be a certain way, but being rational is one thing, but being reasonable is another, right? There are certain things that we do because it just seems logical to the individual. Being rational is not easy, right, all the time. Being coldly rational is not for everyone. And there are circumstances around us. I do highly recommend this conversation. You can find it on the BFM app. Just search up escaping the poverty trap. Or if you know Elder Shafil's name, it's just spell it out there and you'll be able to get it. Definitely tune into that. But more importantly, let us know what you think about anything we've talked about, right? How have you built your emotional quotient with your colleagues? What are you doing in this work from home environment? We really do want to know. And if we don't get into your messages, I'm sure our colleagues over at Enterprise, who cover this all the time, will love to hear what you have to say.
Yes, and that number is 018-789-8899 or over on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let us know what you think. But up next, we are taking a look at the role that social media has to play when it comes to the job hunt. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanisen. That was Incubus with Talk Shows on Mute. And Roshan Kanisen, you had something that you were burning to say about that song title.
I mean, Lynn, now that you've pointed it out, it doesn't sound as nice anymore, because I was going to say, yes, that was Talk Shows on Mute, but this talk show is not on mute.
Okay, yes.
See, it doesn't work the same way. Like, if you had come in and introduced it that way, it would have been perfect.
I was trying to be nice because I stole your thunder yesterday by talking about Spotify Wrapped. I gave you the opportunity.
Well, this is definitely something that won't go on your Instagram to promote your job, because obviously it didn't play out that well. This is not a great showcase of your skills, Lynn Mark.
Hey, I take great offense to that. But anyway, we'll put that aside and fight it out later. No, just kidding. So we're talking about social media platforms this morning because, you know, we all assume that LinkedIn is going to be the main place that people, that recruiters go to when they are looking for people to fill a position. And so most of us do, in the working world, do curate our LinkedIn to present whatever image it is that you want recruiters to see. But nowadays, it is the age of social media. It's not just LinkedIn that people looking to hire may have access to. It's also things like Instagram, for example, which apparently has risen in popularity when it comes to recruiters using the platform to search for candidates.
Yeah, so I have, let's just say I've been experimenting a lot with different social media, right? Each of them have a facet for you to use. LinkedIn is your digital CV. It's the place where you put your work. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more cut and dry, but it's a professional place. That's what it is, right? It's a professional place. You don't put your photos of your kids there. You don't put a photo of your dog there. You don't put a video of a family video there. That's not the place to do it. That is very strictly it's a business environment. Now, Instagram is very interesting, right? And these stats here are quite interesting as well, because we're seeing Instagram rise amongst recruiters in terms of their usage. And what it is basically a showcase of skills. On Instagram, because it's a medium that is either front-facing video or, sorry, it is front-facing visuals with a video on Instagram stories. Mm-hmm. If you have a public profile like I do, you can showcase your skills. And that's what we do here as well, right? I mean, I'll put a photo of us on air, or I'll put a photo of some thoughts on something. That's the showcase of our thought process. It's a showcase of the work that we do behind the scenes. Because for all of you listening right now, you don't necessarily get that visual of what's going on. So that's where social media comes in. But for everyone else, especially now that we're distanced, especially now that we are more fragmented in terms of the places that we work, you have the ability to put yourself on social media and get it watched or listened mm-hmm. to or something like that, right? It's not just for the social media influencers. It's for anyone who wants to showcase their skills. And then Facebook has a different purpose, and then Twitter's got a different purpose. They are all different facets of this social online presence of yours. I mean, then of course you've also got the traditional website, right? You've got just a landing page where you just put your CV details. I mean, it's kind of your digital CV.
It can also function, websites function very well as a digital portfolio, right? So I know, and Instagram can do that too. So I know creative people who are in, say, photography or design, who use Instagram as their showcase. Because maybe they don't want to shell out the money to buy a domain name, for example. So Instagram is a good way to do that. And there are also algorithms that you can take advantage of, right, Roshan, when it comes to appearing higher on people's feeds.
So now this is where the power of the community comes into play, mm-hmm. right? Instagram has a very active, very dominant user base, right? Their monthly active users is quite significant. So when you have a user base like that, and you have a community feel about Instagram, people are starting to use hashtags like now hiring or hiring or hashtag now hiring, hashtag hiring and hashtag jobs. And there is a community that's going to want to tap into that and look into it, especially on the creative field. It may not be the accountants. Accountants may not be looking for people on Instagram, but other creatives, other producers, other content creators, anyone in the creative field, or even freelancers for that matter, right? Mm-hmm. It's a place for you to job search. Every job search category, even LinkedIn, has a target demographic that they're looking at. They're not going to get everyone. Not everyone's going to be on LinkedIn. And not everyone's going to want to post on LinkedIn the same way, because it depends on where they see the ROI in terms of putting that effort and work into it, right? Our boss, Malik Ali, the big boss here at BFM, he's become very active on LinkedIn because that's the target demographic that he wants to cater his content to. And it's very written format, right? It's a bit more professional. He's writing articles now. And his pet project now is anything to do with personal finance. That's why we did the webinars earlier this year, right? These are the things that make sense for the LinkedIn platform. But if you took that article and put it on Instagram, it would fail. No one's going to read a 500-word caption, but they will look at the infographics. It really depends what you're trying to do, where you're trying to target it, and maybe what job you get, what areas you're looking at. But again, when you start using hashtags like now hiring and hiring and jobs, it's public.
So I have a very quick question here, which is what place does the Twitter thread have when it comes to getting your thoughts out there? Because Twitter's a slightly different animal as well compared to Instagram.
This is where Donald Trump really shines, right? You love him or hate him, he knows how to use Twitter. Twitter is supposed to be this place where you're just putting out your thoughts, right? It's supposed to be this instant, like, oh, I thought about this, I'm tweeting it out. Or you have longer threads where you're dissecting more newsworthy things. Twitter is a very now place. It's a very current information center. And you're just trying to keep up with things. And Twitter is a giant conversation in a big hall, and everyone's just talking. And you can just listen to whatever conversation you just walk by and just join the conversation as and when. Engagement is very different, I think. Twitter engagement is not done as well. But again, I may be a wannabe expert here, so let me know what you think and whether I've got this wrong.
Yes, and since we're talking about Twitter, head on over there and tweet us. Our handle is at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us 01878988899. Right now, though, the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up after some music. Don't Let Me Down Gently by The Wonder Stuff, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Florence and the Machine with Addicted to Love, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now we are turning our attention to what's been happening around the world overnight, and there's been some news out of Hong Kong, right, Roshan?
Yes, there has been. Yesterday we talked about how Joshua Wong was sentenced to 13 months along with two other activist leaders. I think 10 and 12 months they got. Today it looks like a Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy supporter Jimmy Lai has been charged with fraud and detained until a court hearing in April. That's another 5 months away. So on Thursday, a court denied him bail over a charge relating to the illegal use of his company's premises. And it comes a day after, the three prominent activists were sentenced to jail. The cases now, of course, all this has raised fears of renewed crackdowns on the city-state's activists and media figures spurred by this controversial new security law, right? This has been, I think, part of the story of 2020. We've got COVID-19, we've got anti-government protests, and we've also got market concerns, I think. Oh, right, yes, and the US presidential election. How did I forget that?
Yes, yeah. So Mr. Lai was arrested Wednesday night along with two other senior executives from media company Next Digital. And Next Digital is the company of which Lai is a founder, and it publishes Apple Daily. That's a tabloid that is frequently critical of both Hong Kong and mainland Chinese leadership. So this is not the first issue that Jimmy Lai has faced. Also this year, I think he was also detained a couple of months ago.
So an interesting part of this whole story was, you know, initially when he was being charged or being targeted, essentially, that was in August, I think, right? And his company, Next Digital, I think in a show of support, people started buying the shares up, right? The stock flew up like 1,000% from what was it? I think it was around 9 Hong Kong cents to over like 1.1 Hong Kong dollars. Unfortunately, now it's hovering around 23 cents. So a lot of people may have lost quite a bit of money there. But essentially, I think that was a kind of a show of support at that point in time. It was definitely a very interesting period. But the stock elevation only lasted, I think, for the week itself. But again, this speaks to the larger situation happening in Hong Kong and the identity crisis that the city-state is facing, right? It used to be the meeting of East and West. It used to be that financial hub that had was based in rules-based engagement that the West could trust, but a place where the East could be, and when I mean East, I mean China, could be like, okay, this is the middle point. This is this place where we can parlay and we can do business together. But as China continues to exert its authority over the city-state, questions are being asked of what that means for the financial hub's financial future.
Yes. So it's whether or not China will trust in Hong Kong's leadership moving forward. Are they going to build up other ports in the country to almost rival Hong Kong? So then, you know, that would put Hong Kong's future in jeopardy as well. There are a lot of questions, I think, when it comes to the future of the city-state. But right, and we'll be watching that situation quite closely as well. But over in the U.S., there has also been news of record high COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations on the back of fears as well that this will not slow in the run-up to Christmas at the end of this month. So the number of people in hospital in the US passed 100,000 for the first time, and that has doubled since early November. New cases rose by 195,700 on Wednesday, with a daily death toll of 2,733.
Yeah, infections have now surpassed 14 million nationwide, with more than 224,000 deaths. This is, of course, all this. I think this information is based out of Johns Hopkins University. Mm-hmm. Towards the mid, a few weeks ago, the curve started to flatten a little bit, started going on the downward trend, but it seems to be picking up again. And this, I think, is a very, of course, is a very extreme example of what could happen. But it's one thing for people to get infected. It's the hospitalization that becomes a big issue, because what happens is you start taxing the healthcare sector and the resources and the frontliners. That is what we're trying to avoid. I think at the very bare minimum, trying to make sure that our health capacities can manage the non-zero cases that will be a norm for some time. I think, again, I cite the conversation that we had with the health advisor to the Prime Minister, Tan Sri, Dr. Jamila, who said that getting to zero, we'll do that from time to time, but we have to live with this non-zero environment for a while, and just making sure that the curve is flat enough so that the healthcare system isn't taxed when a curve does spike up. Spikes will happen, but we have green zones. This is why we have the EMCO, and essentially why we're just trying to, you know, it's that picture of a bunch of matches in a row. And if you light one, they're all going to keep lighting until you remove one. It slows things down.
Yeah. So this is basically when you physical distance, you make it harder for the virus to jump and spread to other people. That's basically it. And that is our best defense right now until we have some kind of a viable vaccine. And yes, in the UK, the UK has approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for emergency usage. But whether or not Malaysia is going to follow suit, I think that's not going to be the case right now. And whether or not, of course, we get the vaccine at some point in the near future is also in question. So we're also going to be taking a look at the budget allocation for the health ministry and whether or not it's being effectively utilized to fight all of the battles that our healthcare sector is facing right now. That's going to be happening later at 7:45, and we'll be speaking with Datuk Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, former Minister of Health, of course, as well as MP for Kuala Selangor. Be sure to stay tuned for that conversation. But right now we are heading into some messages and then more local news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Earlier, that was The Great Defender by Lou Reed, and a little snippet of something by Gladys Knight, maybe. Right now, we are taking a look at what's been on the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning. I have the NST in front of me today, and the headline here is actually quite a nice story. The headline is, "Well Done, Cikgu." So this is talking about English teacher Samuel Isaiah, who was one of the top 10 finalists at the Global Teacher Prize. So he didn't win it, but he came within the top 10. And it is encouraging to see that some of our teachers are still able to stand, you know, shoulder to shoulder with other great teachers around the world. And he, of course, was nominated for this Global Teacher Prize because he travels, I believe it is 200 kilometres a day to school where he teaches. And he also introduced the concept of the Sekolah Pokok to Orang Asli children, where he would go to teach English classes under the trees to these children so that they could better learn English. So he's a very hardworking fellow, and congratulations to him for this achievement. What else do we have in the papers, Roshan?
Well, we've got a caught in a bind. That's the headline on the Star. Basically, economists and business sector want the government to lift the CMCO, but National Security Council, which meets today, has to weigh the fact that COVID-19 numbers have been hovering around the four digits for the last month or so. So this is something that's going to be, I think, highly watched, right? Because I think the CMCO in its current form is supposed to come to an end next week, December 6th, which is, yes, next week at this point.
Sunday, so, I think, December 6th.
Yes, yeah. But I think it's supposed to end next week, if I've got the dates correct. Essentially, I think there's a concern over, essentially, people need to spend money, right? And I think in a CMCO environment, although their economic activities are continuing and businesses are operating, there is maybe less movement because people are a bit more concerned, maybe a bit more cautious, a bit more conservative. So they're not also spending that money that we normally need. And December is quite a heavy retail month, considering that it's a bit more of a festive season. And then you lead up to Chinese New Year right after that. So it's going to be an important two to three months for the retail sector, for the consumption sector. I think we talked yesterday to an analyst over at Bloomberg Intelligence about the retail sector in the US, right? How e-commerce is booming, but the rest of the services, the things like the movies, the experiences, they're lagging behind. So that's on the front page of the Star. Although I'd like to highlight here, the committee stage of the budget voting is continuing. And yesterday, MITI's budget got passed in a vote of 110 to 104. And this is the ministry run by Dato' Sri Azmin Ali, who, let's just say, key in the move earlier this year. And if you take, this is the first vote that Warisan took part of, which is why they got, I think the opposition got above 100 votes here. But still, there were four from the opposition that were absent. That was Shafi Abdal, Chow Kon Yao, and Christina Liu. And even if they were present, they would not have been able to beat that margin there, the 110 they got. So, I mean, and then related to this, you're starting to see, there's a story on Malay Mail about how I think within the opposition, you're starting to see fractures there, or at least concerns over what over Anwar's leadership, Dato' Sri Anwar's leadership. We saw it last week. They've now gone to a committee. He said, wait and see, have some patience. We've gone into a committee, the committee selection of the budget, yet there's been no significant moves, right? I mean, the opposition hasn't been able to do anything, really. It's been 11 committee budgets passed.
Yeah, and that's actually also one of the lead stories in the Malay Mail this morning. So the headline here is, with allies' dissent over budget 2021 vote, has the sun set on Anwar's time as opposition chief? So Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim's definitely in the spotlight now, because not so long ago he made the claim that he had a strong, formidable, convincing majority in Parliament. But considering the failure to institute a block vote for the budget 2021 at the policy stage last week, and then now the consistent failures to do anything at the committee stage, that's definitely been called into question.
And you know, the funny thing about all of this is that a lot of times people are looking to budget 2021 as the confidence motion for the Prime Minister, but maybe it's the vote of confidence in the opposition leader. Maybe that's what's happened right now. And I think that's a fair comment to make, right? Because it was very questionable what Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim did last week to his opposition members. I mean, Warisan sat out of almost all 10 budget committee hearings because Shafi Abdal wasn't present yesterday because of dissatisfaction with Anwar Ibrahim.
So
that's a key partner you have there. Tun Mahathir is no longer siding with in part of the coalition officially with his Pejuang faction. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely. So this is going to be something. Both of our major political coalitions, it looks like, are going to be in flux, because even within Perikatan Nasional, there's concern over whether UMNO is really playing ball with the rest of the coalition, and then what's going to happen to them if they don't, because UMNO makes up a significant amount of seats in Parliament.
That is a party that has actually just gone strength to strength, really, in the last year. They are probably, I think, the most stable at this point. I mean, yes, you've got the factionalism there, but in terms of their strength right now in Parliament.
Yeah, so that's going to be something that we'll be watching very closely. But we are about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin right now, and then more business news and analysis for you. But first, here's Gladys Knight back with Running Out, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.